may be seated. Our next case is 2011-1162, Donald P. Troyer et al. Versus Leonard J. Janis, DPM. The appellant, Ms. Valentine.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. I'm Ann Valentine, and I represent the appellants, Donald and Tamara Troyer. The issue before the court this morning is whether or not a dismissal under Civil Rule 10D is governed by the prejudice provisions of Civil Rule 10 or by the prejudice provisions of Civil Rule 41. Appellant submits that Rule 10 governs, that the dismissal was without prejudice, and that an appeal was not required.
Is there a direct conflict between those two rules, in your view?
Yes, Your Honor. There is a direct conflict.
We apply one rule, one party wins. If we apply the other rule, the other party wins.
That is true, Your Honor. They're irreconcilable.
And how do we pick and choose between which rule to apply?
I think you pick and choose which rule applies by the very language of the rule. Civil Rule 10 is a very unique rule that was developed for a very specific set of circumstances in a medical negligence claim.
So you want us to apply the principle that the specific controls the general?
I do, Your Honor. Pursuant to Revised Code Section 1.51, which this court has opined in Somerville versus Forest City, that if the statutes are irreconcilable, one must choose the more specific, newer statute over the general, older statute.
Is there any way that you see harmony between the statutes, between these two rules?
I do not, Your Honor, because if this case is dismissed and the entry is silent, under Rule 41B, that dismissal is deemed a dismissal with prejudice. The specific Civil 10 rule mandates a dismissal without prejudice.
There was something I read in the briefs that suggested that there was no appeal from the denial. What do you make of the fact that there was no appeal?
There was no appeal from the denial, Your Honor. And I make of that 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 is what the rule allows. Civil Rule 10.
Civil Rule 10.
Civil Rule 10 is specific, and it takes precedent over the general 41 rule. If you look at it this way, Civil Rule 41 is a rule that sort of fills in the blanks. There are no other rules that specify that if a dismissal pursuant to that rule is involuntarily made, that that dismissal is either with or without prejudice. So 41 fills in the blanks for us litigants and tells us that if it is silent, it is with prejudice. But Civil Rule 10 specifically applies to a very narrow, unique set of facts and procedures.
Going forward, should this court modify either rule or harmonize them, or are they fine the way they read and we just let lawyers apply them as they fit to their cases?
I think that the rules are clear as they are written. Do I think that clarification might prevent further confusion? I'll leave that to the court's good judgment and its rules committee, but I don't think it would be harmful. But clearly, the rules on their face, especially coupled with the court's guidance in Fletcher, has made it, I think, extraordinarily clear for litigants what happens when a complaint is filed without an affidavit of merit. The Fletcher court, you went so far as to offer the guidance of the proper response by a defendant to answer a complaint that's filed without, and the court clearly stated it was a 12B6 dismissal for failure to state a claim. It went simply to the sufficiency of the complaint and not the merits. And the court in Fletcher spoke clearly and unequivocally about what a dismissal pursuant to Rule 10 means for us.
Thank you.
The court just touched on applying revised code section 1.51 to this particular case. And I understand in the court's argument in Somerville and decision that it applied specifically to a statute. But clearly by logical and sound reasoning, an extension to the civil rules, if the court finds the need to do so, is a sound and logical step to say that a civil rule specifically and recently designed to cover a set of circumstances would take precedent or trump an older general statute. And that's what we have in this case. I know that Appley will rely and talk to the court about the Knisely decision from the 10th District and will point out that if we would have, appellants would have perfected an appeal on the dismissal issue as they did in Knisely, we wouldn't be here. Appellants submit that the Knisely court, because neither of the parties before the court raised the Civil Rule 10 issue, the Knisely court only had the 41 argument in front of it. Both of those parties erroneously assumed that 41 applied and did not raise the issue for the court to consider. It is not an assumption that we share with those parties. We believe that Civil Rule 10, coupled with the court's clear guidance in Fletcher, tells litigants what is required of them in the event a complaint is dismissed for failure to contain an affidavit of merit. I have additional time. I believe the issues are very clearly set forth in our brief. I've clarified what I feel is important for this court to clarify, so if nobody has any further questions, I would just urge the court on behalf of Donald and Tamara Troyer to request a reversal of the erroneous decision of the lower court, overturn the granting of summary judgment, and remand the case for further proceedings on the merits. Thank you.
Counsel.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court, I'm Greg Rankin. Along with co-counsel Ray Pantel, we represent the appellee, Dr. Leonard Janus.
Counsel, if the provision for Rule 10D says that this is not a resolution on the merits, what does that mean?
In my opinion, Your Honor, that means that the entry should have reflected explicitly that the dismissal in our case, which was pursuant to 12B6, was without prejudice, I think.
When would a dismissal for lack of the affidavit be the end to the litigation, that it would be fatal to a refiling?
Well, under Rule 41, it would be fatal if there were two dismissals by operation
okay,
of
well,
law.
Well, you're presuming you get a second shot at it, and here you're saying that they don't even get a second refiling.
That's correct, Your Honor, because I don't think Rule 10D2 and Rule 41B3 are in conflict. I think those rules should be read in pari materia, that they complement each other, and that pursuant to Rule 10, that tells us that the dismissal of a medical malpractice claim on 12B6 is without prejudice, but you have to also include the language in 41B3, which says that tells us how to specify that dismissal in the actual order that's filed with the court. The trial court obviously speaks through its entry.
But the court asked counsel to prepare the entry in this instance.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The entry was submitted to opposing counsel, and there was no language in the entry that said with or without prejudice.
That's correct, Your Honor.
One party agreed, and one party said, I forget what the language was, but
We prepared the entry pursuant to the direction.
You prepared the entry.
Yes,
right.
Yes, Your Honor. Pursuant to the direction of the trial court, it should have included the
copy was sent to opposing counsel.
Yes, it was, Your Honor, pursuant to local rule.
Sign.
Pardon?
Refused to sign?
He received it. There was further communication between counsel for the plaintiff and counsel for plaintiff, and at that time, he indicated that he would not sign that entry, so pursuant to Local Rule 25, we submitted but not approved above his name.
You indicated the entry should have, you prepared it, and it should have stated what?
It should have stated that the dismissal is, because it was a failure to include an affidavit of merit, that the dismissal should have been without prejudice.
And that entry you prepared, and you left that language out, hoping what? That they wouldn't catch it, and then therefore you would be, they'd be trapped?
No, Your Honor. What we hope to accomplish, and I think Justice Ratton is very familiar with the Local Rule 25, we included the language that we did because there was no language in the decision of the trial court stating that it was with or without prejudice. So,
but
because
you knew what the rule says, that the rule says it's without prejudice. It seems to me we have basically the issue is, is it by operation of law without prejudice, or do you have to put the words in the entry, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you didn't put the words in the entry because you don't want those words in the entry because you don't want them to appeal it, correct?
Well, that was not why the language was not included. In fact, as the court can see from our attached exhibits, there was an exchange between plaintiff counsel and defense counsel at that time, and it was indicated that we were not including the without prejudice language in the entry because it was not contained in the opinion of the court.
But the rule governed the court's opinion, didn't it?
It does, and the remedy for the plaintiff.
So if the rule governs the court's opinion and you didn't put it in the entry, even though the rule governed the court's opinion, aren't we just creating another procedural bar or a procedural trap that the plaintiff bar has to worry about in these very complex affidavit of prejudice cases when we have a very clear rule, we have a Fletcher case, and what is the harm? What is the harm if the rule says it's without prejudice and you forget or you deliberately don't put that language in for whatever you're trying to do? You come back for your second effort, and then if you blow that, you're done.
Well, in our opinion, our position on this is that the rule is clear, and the obligation to make sure that the entry through which the court speaks does represent what the trial court intended to do is a shared one between defense counsel, plaintiff's counsel, and the court.
So if they came back with an entry that said, we want with prejudice in here, you would have said no because it's not in the judge's entry.
I disagree, Your Honor. But I think at that point, if they would have submitted their own proposed entry, then it would be up to the trial court to decide which entry to select and file.
If the trial court picked yours, then did they have to appeal that within 30 days?
If the trial court
picked yours. You submit yours, says no entry. They submit their, or no prejudice. They submit theirs, says with prejudice. Trial judge picks yours. Now what's their obligation?
Well, they have a number. If they feel that was incorrect, that the trial court's decision was incorrect, they could file a motion for reconsideration, which they did in this case, or they could appeal that judgment. Again, since
even though the judge already had a rule governing his behavior, now they have to go through all these procedural hoops because you wouldn't agree to put that language in there.
No, because the court chose their entry over our entry. The court made a decision.
And you made a conscious decision not to put it in your entry.
Your Honor, we explained that to plaintiff's counsel, the reason why, because the language wasn't in the opinion of the trial court.
Fletcher. Counsel, did the court base its opinion on anything other than Rule 10D?
No, Your Honor. That was the sole basis.
So everybody knew what the defect was. And for you to stand here and say that the court didn't specifically instruct us to put without prejudice in the entry, and therefore we're going to benefit by that when everybody, counsel for both parties as well as the judge, understands why the case had to be dismissed, and then say it's a gotcha moment?
Again, Your Honor, that the responsibility of putting on an entry that, in the court's opinion, reflects its decision is a shared one between counsel. We followed the local rules by submitting a proposed entry to plaintiff's counsel. Plaintiff counsel objected to it but failed to submit his own proposal.
Did you think that this dismissal was with merit? That this disposed of the case?
No, Your Honor, I don't. Under Fletcher, a dismissal for failure to attach an affidavit of merit in a medical malpractice claim is not an adjudication on the merits. But that has to be reflected in the entry. It's our opinion that that language, without prejudice in this case, has to be reflected
then
in the entry.
If it would have been, as Justice Stratton said, then you have to go through the rigmarole of an appeal because, you know, there's two words that were inappropriately contained in a motion, so then you further delay the adjudication of the merits of the case because of this inability of counsel to read a rule and apply it?
That's what happened to Nicely, Your Honor. That was the law that was pending in the 10th District Court of Appeals at the time these events were taking place. And I can't speak to why plaintiff's counsel didn't submit their own proposed entry. I submit to the court that it was a knowing waiver on the part of plaintiff's counsel, prior counsel, not counsel who is seated here today, but that counsel has an obligation.
It was a knowing waiver. In other words, I've just filed a case. I've been dismissed because I don't have the affidavit. A short time later, I produce an affidavit and try and refile. So I intentionally wanted to end my client's case. That's what we have to believe on the part of the plaintiff's counsel here.
I don't know. I can't speak for plaintiff's counsel, but we tendered a proposed entry to them before we filed it. This wasn't a situation where we surreptitiously submitted an entry to a duty judge and asked that person to sign an entry. We followed the steps set forth in Local Rule 25. Submitted that entry to plaintiff's counsel. At that point in time, under Local Rule 25, plaintiff's counsel has the opportunity to submit their own proposed entry.
Well, you could argue that you waived, too. You knowingly left out a part of Rule 10D.
Well, Your Honor, we didn't knowingly leave that language out. We tried to mirror the language that the trial court included in its and so rightly or wrongly, that entry went on, and one of the things that's been, I think, glossed over in these proceedings, in hindsight, that entry did not state without prejudice as it should have. It was also labeled as a judgment entry, and at that point in time, the remedy, the plaintiff had a number of options that could be pursued.
Mr. Rankin, help me understand the 10th District here. If I understand it, the entry, whatever it said, and it was labeled judgment entry, the 10th District said it should have been appealed. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, under Nicely.
Because it was not appealed, the court is saying res judicata.
Correct. And actually, a notice of appeal was filed by plaintiff, and in their docketing statement, they note in the first appeal that this was a judgment had gone on, that it was a final judgment entry, that this was not a premature appeal of a court decision, and affirmatively stated that when they filed their first appeal, and then subsequently they dismissed that appeal in the 10th District.
If we were to find that by operation of law in a situation like this, that the entry that is put on because of lack of affidavit is not a final appealable order, we would not have that problem with res judicata. Would you agree?
That would be correct, right. Your Honor.
Thank you.
But all we're asking this court to do is to recognize that although the underlying judgment entry was flawed, mistaken, improperly worded, that it still stood as the judgment entry. And from that point in time, that dictated the remedies that the plaintiff could pursue. And those remedies under Nicely were an appeal. And while it may result in further paperwork and time and so forth, the fact of the matter is that was the remedy that could have been pursued. Also,
it was
60B.
Done by operation of law. If Rule 10 it takes effect by operation of law, you agree that that language would not have been necessary to be included in the entry?
I'm not sure I follow Your Honor's question, but there were a specific, I think both Rule 10 and Rule 41B3.
But we're just concentrating on Rule 10, and we say that the statement in Rule 10D that states that this is a dismissal other than on the merits, and we determine that is by operation of law, this first dismissal based on the lack of an affidavit is by operation of law, then that language is not necessary to be included with or without prejudice.
Well, I would still contend that under 41B3, which states the language that should be contained in a court's involuntary dismissal, that language should still be included on a judgment entry. We don't believe that Rule 10 and Rule 41 are irreconcilably in conflict, Your Honor. Civil Rule 10D2D was revised and amended in 2007. At that time, had this court wished to also amend Rule 41B4, it could have done so and included not only that language that said that a dismissal. An involuntary dismissal under 41B3 for lack of jurisdiction or failure to join a party, but they also, the court could have included failure to attach an affidavit to a complaint filed in a medical malpractice action, and that was not done. So I think this court...
Should that be done? Should this be a matter that we would contemplate sending back to the Rules Committee to re-examine these rules for maybe some cleanup language or something along the lines that you're suggesting to clarify this issue?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that's correct, because right now Civil Rule 41B3 says, except as otherwise provided in B4, dismissals that are silent shall be considered to be on the merits.
And with so many malpractice cases going around the state being filed, what should we write in this case to clarify this case for all the trial judges and all the litigants and all the lawyers who are looking at this matter?
We would ask the court to specifically find that a 12B6 dismissal of a medical malpractice action for failure to attach an affidavit of merit is, in fact, otherwise than on the merits. It's without prejudice. But that language needs to be included in the underlying entry, because if the courts are able to engraft other rules that are information that's not contained in the court's entry itself, then it opens those decisions up
so
to
we
collateral
have
attack.
A careless lawyer or someone who's not paying attention, and we get a situation parroting this one. Then we find failure to file an appeal, and we get a res judicata determination? Is that what we're going to end up with?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, sometimes the rules do operate to yield harsh results. And in this case, I believe that's what happened. Yeah. But the prevailing law at the time said if the language in a case, medical malpractice case that's dismissed under Rule 10 doesn't contain the language that it's without prejudice, then the remedy is to file an appeal. And if
right,
the appeal's
thank
not filed.
Thank you, Mr. Rankin. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Valentine?
Very briefly, Your Honors. We are not here because there was a harsh result. We're here because the law was misapplied in this particular set of circumstances and denied our client his right to a jury trial. I think the rules could be modified to be more clear, but with the state of what is present right now, Civil Rule 10D, coupled with the Fletcher decision, it really can't be much more clear as to what a dismissal means for failing to attach an affidavit of merit.
Do you agree with the position articulated by Mr. Rankin that the language of the entry from the trial court must contain the words without prejudice in order to effectuate what you're arguing to us?
I do not, Your Honor. And again, because Civil Rule 10 has its own mandate and specifically specifies, it's the only civil rule that specifically specifies that if your case is dismissed for failing to comply with this rule, it's a dismissal without prejudice.
41 well, it doesn't say that. It just says other than on the merits, right?
Right. Shall be a dismissal otherwise than on the merits, which equates to being able to refile and no res judicata.
Counsel, did I understand that there was an appeal, a notice of appeal filed in the first instance in this case?
There was a notice of appeal filed in the first instance, and it was dismissed.
And the appeal was on the entry as it stood?
The appeal was on the entry as it stood.
What effect should we give to the dismissal?
I don't believe the court should give any effect to the dismissal. The dismissal was improvidently, or the appeal itself was improvidently made. Under a dismissal without prejudice under Ohio law is not a final appealable order. There's no right to appeal.
So once the case was refiled with the affidavit and then dismissed based on, that should be the only thing controlling procedurally as to why we're here in this room.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I would just urge the court to remand and reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you very much, counsel.